Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Looking for an affordable new home? Wyndham Mobile Homes is what you need. Discover all our spacious models, perfect for every lifestyle. Your dream home is waiting. Visit Wyndham Mobile Homes in Corinth today or online at wyndham-homes.com.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Will East in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Will.
Morning, morning, morning. Somebody moved my microphone.
I saw that. Man, a whole bunch of stuff going on over the weekend. Wow.
I'm telling you, the news cycle is just outrageous these days.
Incredible.
You just can't keep up with everything.
As much as, you know, we try. It just, as soon as you think you're caught up, boom, there's another dump of
you know,
because
like here we do, you know, obviously Mississippi stuff, but you also national stuff, and then sports and, you know, markets and all this. I mean, just, it's like you're, nowadays you're inundated with everything.
Yeah.
All at once. Everything all at once. That's my saying. Everything. Everybody wants. It's everything all at the same time.
Yeah. It's and it sure feels like that's exactly what's going on right now, as we just witness everything that just the cycle of it. And I think some of it is because there's so many more sources, so many more outlets for news, for media, and it's a good thing in that. There's a race among media outlets to see who can get that out there. And, you know, one sees it, another outlet's covering something and release the story, and boom, they got to get all over it. So it's not like the old days where you sort of had limited sources.
Yeah.
Now it's almost unlimited, it feels like, that's for sure. But and I think we benefit from that, if you think about it. We benefit as just consumers to all that. But, man, over the weekend... Of course, Saturday was December 7th, and we should recognize that is the anniversary date of Pearl Harbor, mm-hmm. 1941. Who could forget FDR's famous speech? Essentially, that pulled this country into World War II when the Japanese attacked, man, sitting ducks there. The fleet at Pearl Harbor. A couple of thousand people, I think, perished.
It was nearly 3,000 from what I memory serves me correctly. It's an incredible story. I don't know if you've ever... There's been obviously a lot of documentaries and movies. Don't watch the movie Pearl Harbor, by the way. It's terrible with Ben Affleck.
I've seen that. It isn't very good.
But it's just this incredible story of... of just utter shock. I mean, there was this one. I remember this one story of this the guy who was kind of in charge of everything. I believe his name was Admiral Husband Kimmel, I believe.
Yeah,
and he was the guy who was kind of like in charge of the Pearl Harbor naval base, and all this stuff starts happening. He's basically in shock, and later after the war, he basically got blamed for all this stuff.
Hmm.
And he actually got hit with a 50 caliber round. But the round went through several layers of building material and stuff and basically hit him in the chest and bounced off of him.
That's,
you know, and he later said, I wish that round would have just cut me in two because then I would have died a hero. Yeah.
Huh.
It's pretty, you know, there's all these individuals, the whole, you've got the big, you know, the stuff that happens, and then you've got these individual stories which are so incredible. And of course, the USS Arizona going down and the sound that it made. We actually have a interview that we did with a guy who was there. It's on our podcast called True American Heroes. It's on available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. But I can't remember the gentleman's name off the top of my head. But he was there when it happened, and he's since passed away. And basically, his story. He later would go on to be on the Yorktown carrier. But yeah. December 7th, 1941, if you're old enough to remember September 11th, most of us, I would think, are, but there's some who aren't.
Yeah.
It was that same, you know, shock, basically. I don't know a better word to describe it, but shock. And the Japanese, the attack was basically a Hail Mary. They knew they couldn't win in a long-term fight, and their thought was, if we shock them enough, maybe they'll capitulate.
That was the idea.
That was the idea.
That was the theory, yep.
I believe Admiral Yamamoto, yep. I believe his name was. Yep. He had been to the U.S. He knew the industrial. He had been to Harvard University. He had traveled the Midwest. He'd been to Texas. He knew the industrial capacity of the United States. And he knew that if they got into a war with the United States, that they would eventually lose. And his thought was, we're going to knock them out with one single blow. And if that and he didn't think it would succeed, by the way.
Yeah.
He knew that it was probably going to fail, but that was the only chance they had, and that's the reason why they did it. But.
I mean, felt like that, okay, after this, you're right, they're going to back down, and we're just going to keep steaming on into California, was the theory. That was the plan.
You know, they attacked California, actually. It was kept hush-hush at the time because they didn't want to instill panic, but basically they attacked California. There were sirens that went off, and basically the government got involved and just said, "Oh, it was a training." I can't remember the exact story they came up with, but they didn't want panic to ensue.
Yeah,
out in California, but yeah, the Japanese attacked California. You know, and it was very small in the grand scheme of things, but yeah, pretty incredible story.
So the survivors, I think there's 16. The report I read over the weekend,
really?
16 remaining. Wow. Two returned to Hawaii for the annual celebration. It's really not a celebration, but a recognition event to honor those who were killed. Two survivors, ages 104 and 102. God bless them. I'm looking at a photo of them. They're both in wheelchairs at the event. It's just incredible. Man, we can't forget, and I did get a text on Friday just noting that it was tomorrow, Saturday, this past Saturday, and that was from our friend Tommy Lofton, who, of course, runs the Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. He
uh-huh.
just wanted to remind us of that, and I didn't get to it, and I felt bad about it on Friday. You know how you get busy scrolling through all the texts, and then something happens and so forth. And so I apologize for not saying anything about it Friday, but I wanted to start today's show off by just remembering Pearl Harbor Day. Fell on a Saturday this year, December 7th, 1941, of course. So 83 years later. 83
yeah.
years. That's incredible. So naturally, anyone that survived it would be over 100, I would think. I can't imagine that would be the case. You would have to be, what, 17 or younger to be younger than 100 today, which is really incredible. So thank you to those brave men who lost their lives. So the data I'm looking at, Will, says 2,400 perished, 1,200 injured. So big time deal. The yep. might of America showed up, no doubt about it.
And I'm going to tell you, it was one of those things that galvanized. There were a lot of, I mean, Roosevelt, FDR's campaign pledge was, he'll keep us out of the war.
Yeah.
You know, America didn't want to be in that war because they had so many terrible memories of World War One, even though we kind of came in late in that one. But, and I also remember reading a story about Winston Churchill. When he heard the attack, he had basically tears, And it wasn't tears of sadness. It was tears of joy.
Yeah.
And the reason why they were tears of joy was because at the time, Britain was standing alone against the Axis powers.
Yeah.
Mainly not Nazi Germany. And he basically had tears of joy, smiling, saying he knew that they were going to win the war then because he had America on his side. And the industrial capacity that America brought, he knew that they would win the war when Pearl Harbor happened. There's so many incredible stories just from that one day. And it's one of those things where you, as much as you study it, it's still kind of hard to wrap your mind around.
It truly is.
It's mind blowing.
It truly is. Today we've got Martha Allen, Executive Director of Extra Table, coming on the program. She'll discuss the work that they do here in Mississippi. That's at 11:05. It's Monday. That means we've got a short show in store for you. At 12:05, it's Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors. Right now, we're stepping aside for a break. The Dow is down 111 points at this hour. Stay with us.
Back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. We are in the Element Wealth studio. Are you thinking about or planning for a retirement? Do you have a plan? Go to myelementwealth.com. Call 601-957-6006 to let Element Wealth help you find your balance between income, growth, and guarantees. We're going to be at the Sheraton in Flowood is middays tomorrow. For the 4th Annual Empower Mississippi Policy Summit, gain insights from leading policy experts on the issues that matter most to the great state of Mississippi. Everyone is invited. You can register in advance at empowerms.org. You're looking forward to that, Will. The C Spire text line, 601-879-4395, if you'd like to join the conversation. In fact, Josh in Bruce, Mississippi, did just that, says, I have a 101-year-old great-uncle who lives in Arizona who was at Pearl Harbor, one of the greatest individuals I've ever known. I believe he still pastors a small church out there. Wow. Thanks for sharing that.
Wow.
Josh, that is fantastic. So many, of course, American heroes involved in that devastating, tragic attack. Deliberate, as FDR described it. No doubt about it. The 2024 Word of the Year, Will, I shared this last week. Different organizations will choose their own word. And it was Time Magazine that came out with one that I think kind of shocked everybody. It did me because it's a word I've never heard of before. Kakistocracy.
What is that? I've never heard that.
Yeah, and it's basically a word that means you're under the control in a country or in any jurisdiction, if you will, that elects its leaders, that you're under the control of someone who is not qualified. And that, this is The Economist, pardon me, that came up with this. Time came up with a different set of words. The Economist, which is a more left-leaning publication from the UK. And I never heard of it either. So they're feeling like that with the election of Mr. Trump and many of those whom he has tapped to serve in his administration, that they've selected the word. They're still aggrieved. They're still bent out of shape about the results of the election. Kakistocracy, the rule of the worst, is what it means. The first root, kakos, is found in a few others in the English language. And I think kakos has a Greek derivation, if
sounds
I'm not...
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah, Greek has another root for rule, kratia, K-R-A-T-I-A. And that is featured in words such as democracy, aristocracy, gerontocracy, theocracy, plutocracy, as well as meritocracy.
Most words have a Greek origin.
Right.
I have learned that trying to take some Greek.
Because you happen to have a connection to that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do.
So the C-R-A-C-Y, I'm not sure what that comes from, but that's part of it. So kakistocracy. Okay.
Kakistocracy.
That's what they say is the word of the year, The Economist. On the other hand, Merriam-Webster came out with theirs over the weekend, and it is polarization. Polarization. Merriam-Webster says, well, this is one of those words that both sides of the political spectrum can agree on. Search volume on Merriam-Webster.com throughout the year reflected the desire of Americans to better understand the complex state of affairs in our country and around the world. Thus, we define polarization as division into two sharply distinct opposites, especially a state in which the opinions, beliefs, or interests of a group or society no longer range along a continuum, but become concentrated as opposing extremes. That seems like an awfully long definition for the word. I think people get it. We just don't agree, so to speak. It's a more simple explanation of it. So they said that it was used widely across the media landscape. Fox News reported that Vance's debate answer on immigration crisis shows voter polarization, while MSNBC observed that the 2024 presidential election has left our country more polarized than ever. Thus, the selection of the word polarization by the dictionary-making folks there at Merriam-Webster. How about that?
So the Washington Post also had a word of the year.
Okay.
Theirs was slop.
Okay.
S-L-O-P, which describes the explosion of AI-generated social media images, viral recipes, and online how-to guides. And they are, I will tell you what, I don't normally agree with the Washington Post on a whole lot. This is one I do agree with. If you try to search for anything, it's a bunch of crap out there now.
Yeah.
Slop is a great word.
Yeah, that's true.
You look for a how-to guide on stuff. I was looking. I had to repair something at the house the other day, and so I was looking online to find something, and I went through like 15 videos of junk. How to repair this, and they never tell you how to repair it. And then finally I found one. It was this old guy who had his old cell phone, and he recorded how to fix this certain thing, and lo and behold, that was the one that worked. But all the ones that looked like they, you know, were the, oh, how to fix such and such.
Yeah, well,
they were wrong.
You've got to, of course, consume about 8 million ad videos, right, before you
about get, 8 million ads.
Things like it.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible how much, you know, my wife and I were sitting at the house last night. We'd prepared dinner. We were sitting down What do you want to watch on TV? What do you watch on TV for us? I don't know about you, Gerard, but for us, it's become a 30-minute long endeavor. What do you want to watch? I don't know. What do you want to watch? Okay. And then you have all these options, Netflix and Hulu and YouTube TV and Pluto and all these things to watch nowadays on TV. It's you take more time trying to figure out what to watch than actually watching.
A lot of choices.
There is so many choices. It's an incredible abundance of choices.
Yeah, it is. And but isn't that a good thing?
It is a good thing, but at the same time,
you can't figure out.
You can't figure it out, and you probably miss stuff because you're looking for that niche thing that just fits everything. That you miss something that you. I'll give you an example: Downton Abbey, a show that I thought I would hate.
Yeah.
I ended up loving it.
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife likes it.
You know why? I like it. It's a very well done show, but I would never have watched that. I would never have chosen that show to watch. But one day I was, my internet was down. I had the antenna on my TV, so I could only pick up the local channels, right? And I sat there and I watched PBS and I watched Downton Abbey, and I thought, man, this is a good show. I never would have selected it.
Yeah.
Nowadays we are inundated with choices, and a lot of times it just frustrates us.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of slop.
Yeah, well, that, I think, is a relevant word, given what you just described, which I think is consistent with most folks' experience these days, no doubt about it.
How many times does somebody recommend a show to you, and they say, oh, you're going to love this show? You got to get through the first season. You got to watch, like, the first 8 episodes, and then it'll get really good. I get that all the time.
Well, I have to admit, I don't watch too much television for entertainment, and I mainly do that on Sunday evenings when all the news is kind of settled down and calmed down. And I like to watch MASH reruns. Still like those. And last night was one of the best of all time. And it featured Father Mulcahy writing a letter back to his sister at home where he felt like he was of no value in his work there at the 4077th. He felt just undervalued and not able to make a difference, as he said. I don't know if you remember that episode, but it's also where Radar writes Major Winchester's mother for something that would kind of cheer him up at Christmas, and she sent his toboggan. And he put that toboggan on, which reminded him of his childhood.
Yeah.
He was just ecstatic about that. Coming right back in the Element Well studio.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
You in the Element Well studio. So we need to pass on to you that Senator Jennifer Branning prevailed and defeated Jim Kitchens in the race for Mississippi Supreme Court District 1. That was called Friday after we completed the show by the AP. 1,440 votes separated the two, with nearly 127,000 cast, which is slightly more than half that were cast in the general election. So turnout quite low, expected somewhat. But, so we're going to have a new Supreme Court justice. Now, that is an 8-year term that the senator has been elected to. So there we go, defeating an incumbent. in a very tight race, obviously. 1,400 votes.
Yeah, that is.
I kind of predicted under 1,000, so I missed it. I thought that just doing some extrapolation on the counties and what remained and so forth. But still, 1,400 is not a lot. What's that, 1.2 or 3%, I think, of the total? And, by the way, a good article on 1.2, to be exact, 126,610 total votes cast. Good article at supertalk.fm, written by Ben Milam from the Supertalk News Department, if you want to get into some more details on that. But that's a big-time deal there. And what a unique and interesting, shall we say, district it is. It is like bright purple. It, of course, when you got a race that comes down to 1,400 votes out of 126,000, that's a clear indicator that it is kind of a half-and-half deal.
Because it goes all the way from Vicksburg kind of across to Jackson to Meridian, right?
Yeah, all the way to the east, the Alabama line, kind of a double layer, if you will, of counties across from west to east, extending west to east, then north and south along the river. So you get into the Delta and on down towards the Natchez area there.
Yeah, that's about as purple as you can
get. It's extremely purple, right. And so, and then, of course, it includes Hinds County, which went rather overwhelmingly, as you would expect, for Kitchens. And even though Supreme Court candidates do not associate with a party, I mean, and they don't, of course, once they're elected and seated as well, still they sort of campaign to, you know, the demographics and the political persuasions that more align with their philosophy. And so when Jennifer Branning received the endorsement of the state GOP, I mean, clearly she emerged as the favorite among Republican voters in the general election. There were five candidates and a couple of others you might say, well, they're more Republican, right-leaning. But it came down, as expected, to a runoff between her and Jim Kitchens, who you know, more kind of paints himself as moderate to left-leaning. I will say this, Will, you know, it's not appropriate, I don't think, to criticize anyone when they issue a concession statement. So I'm not going to do that. But I will just point out that there was a statement in Justice Kitchens' overall press release there when he conceded that I felt like could have been left out. And he says, to start out with, just so you get kind of the tone, I congratulate Senator Branning and her supporters on their successful campaign. I'm grateful to those who supported me, not only in this election, but in 08 and 16 as well. But he goes on to say, of course, he did his best to represent the people of Mississippi on their highest court. He says, I have kept my oath of office by administering justice without respect to persons and by doing equal right to the poor and the rich. I could have done without that, honestly. So while I very much respect and appreciate Justice Kitchens for issuing this congratulatory statement, and I don't want it to be about anything but that, I just felt like that maybe invoking what to me felt like a little class warfare could have been left out of the statement. Mm-hmm. But we appreciate him for his service, and I respect him for issuing this statement. It's time to move on, that's for sure. But I caught this. I don't know how many people actually saw his official statement after the race was called. But there you go. So, eight-year term. 8 years. Right. And I think there's no doubt that Justice Kitchens' age was potentially a factor. He's 81, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so he would be running for an eight-year term as an 81-year-old. You know, we just had a sitting president who decided not to run for re-election a few short months ago.
Well, decided to and then decided against.
Well, yeah, that's my apologies. And I think that was largely driven by his performance in June, remember, in his debate versus the Republican nominee Donald Trump. He didn't fare well, and it wasn't too terribly long after that. We could certainly speculate on what caused him to step down. Was it his decision of his own accord? Was he kind of influenced, shall we say, by others? I don't know that we'll ever know the full truth on that. It does seem like he's a little bitter about it, honestly.
Yeah.
And if you saw this weekend, President-elect Trump over at the christening, the ceremony commemorating the reopening of the Notre Dame Cathedral in France, looked to me like he's not only the leader of this country, he's like right now the leader of the free world.
It's pretty amazing. I don't remember a president-elect being visited by so many foreign luminaries.
Yeah, agree.
As he is. You've had Trudeau from Canada. He obviously met with French President
Macron.
Macron.
Yep.
Then he met with Prince William.
Sure did.
And the joke was, here's this guy, you know, a couple months ago, he was working at McDonald's. Now here is Prince William.
So I think it's largely because Mr. Trump understands the clout, the power, the dominance this country has on the global stage.
And he was president before. I think that's another thing. He's not a new.
That's true.
He's met them before. It's not, they're not strangers.
That's absolutely
true. But I think
true.
They understand that him coming in, it's going to be a little bit different than it was. We're not going to have somebody who spends literally half his week at his beach house.
Well, and where I was going is that he certainly will not hesitate to leverage this country's position of power in global negotiations on anything from there.
He's already doing it with Canada.
Right. So you're seeing that. Whereas the Democrats in the current administration, this kind of goes back to me to Barack Obama. Who could forget? I mean, this was kind of the pivotal moment when he was traveling abroad, and it was described as the apology tour.
Yeah.
Remember that? And was afraid to, seemingly, to even tout American exceptionalism. Like, that's just crazy.
He was basically apologizing for the years under George Bush.
Right. So I think the message on November 5th of this year was, no, we want a president that will reassert and establish this country's position of dominance and power on the global stage and leverage that, just like you would in business, honestly. I mean, in any competitive endeavor. And it to some extent is. So I think they want to be in his good graces as a result, because he means business, and he'll use the tools at his disposal, to ensure that it's always America first, and we haven't seen that in the last 4 years. So you hear that referred to a lot, the America First agenda, and he's kind of the leader of that, and he's picked, I think, nominees to serve in his administration that share his philosophy. I'm grateful for that, honestly. I think that's exactly how it should be, and we got to look out for Americans first. There's no doubt about it, and he's the guy to do it.
Yeah, we haven't had that in a while.
We haven't had it in a while. But congratulations to Senator Jennifer Branning for winning. By the way, Jeff on the C-Spire text line says, Pennsylvania police have arrested a man that might have something to do with the murder.
Oh!
Yeah, I just saw that. He's being questioned at this moment.
Oh!
Yeah, coming right back in the Element Well studio.
Patriotism.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
We're back with you in the Element Well studio. Let's see, this Friday, December the 13th, we're fighting hunger this holiday season with a holiday food drive. We're going to be collecting donations coming up. We have an article about that on our website. We're going to be at the Kroger on I-55 North in Jackson, middays, Will. And it's all about fighting hunger this holiday season. And there are a number of sponsors involved in this event as well that are going to be working with us on this. We had Dr. Jennifer Bryan on last week talking about how the Mississippi Medical Association is also driving this effort. So come by and see us. We're going to be at the Kroger on I-55. Love to see you. So two remotes this week. Tomorrow at the Sheraton in Rankin County, in Flowood, for the big Empower event, the Empower Policy Summit. And then this Friday, we'll be on the road again at the food drive on I-55, the Kroger there. Looking forward to that. So, they're questioning at this point a person of interest, as it goes, in the murder of the United Healthcare CEO, which occurred last week.
There's a picture going around of this guy in the back. It looks like a squad car, but that's actually a taxi. I don't know if you're looking at the same picture I am, but they released a new photograph of the guy in the back of a taxi, and he's looking. This taxi has like this glass shield, basically, to separate the passenger from the driver, and he's looking through it, and it kind of looks like a squad car.
Yeah,
but that's not. That's actually from a taxi. That was a picture that the NYPD released. I think it was either yesterday or earlier today. But now, yeah, there's a couple people out there reporting, the Daily Mail, one of them, that they are questioning a man in Pennsylvania. Altoona, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Altoona.
Altoona, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy how they've been able to track this guy with all the cameras and everything that's going on in New York City. They were able to track him pretty quickly, even though he did escape. They found the backpack. I don't know if you heard that story.
Yeah.
Had Monopoly money in it. It was filled with Monopoly money.
Wow.
Which is kind of, it's just so weird.
That is weird. You know, this certainly has kind of elevated and brought to the forefront the discussion just about healthcare in this country, healthcare economics specifically, healthcare insurance. And I've seen, you know, out on social media, it's crazy. Some of the rhetoric and the vitriol going on. Oh, he got what he deserved. I mean, the guy was murdered in cold blood. I get it. You may have an axe to grind with your health insurer, and it could be United Healthcare. But that doesn't warrant snuffing out a person's life and murdering a person under any circumstances. And it's been disappointing to see people who I think I would consider right-leaning who have joined in this this targeting and join in this rhetoric where they're, of course, denouncing not only the health insurance industry, but they seem to be somewhat condoning the murder of this CEO of this company. That's disappointing to see that happen in this country. Again, who's next? You know, you don't like the price of eggs or something? And, you know, gas? I don't know. And you go take someone's life as retribution for that? Well, that's not right. That's wrong as well.
The CEO of United Health Group, which I guess is the
parent company, the holding company,
There's a leaked video of him basically saying that they're going to continue to prevent, quote, unnecessary care. This, I guess, was some internal video that was recorded and then got out. And, of course, the message is, you can only imagine. This dude's next.
Yeah.
I'm glad the killer is still on the loose. This guy needs to be killed next. These are on social media. Still available, by the way. I'm looking at the tweets right now.
So folks need to keep in mind that when insurance companies are reimbursing for, quote, unnecessary care. Now, I realize that's highly subjective, what's necessary and what's not, and that's what causes all the consternation. But that means all of our costs go up. It's a tough one. We need to keep talking about this. Martha Allen, Executive Director of Extra Table, is coming up after Fox News and Super Talk News. Stay with us.
Your Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher. And now, another hour of the talk that keeps Mississippi talking. Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Begin your transition now.
Now on Super Talk Mississippi.
Back, everyone. It is hour two of Middays. We're once again live from the Element Wealth studio. We now welcome Martha Allen, Executive Director of Extra Table. Hey, Martha.
Hey, good morning. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Glad to be here talking with you.
Absolutely. So today, is this right, is the 15th anniversary of the organization Extra Table.
You are spot on.
Wow.
Exactly. So today marks 15 years since the very first delivery that Chef Robert St. John made to Edward Street Food Pantry in Hattiesburg. Their shelves were empty and his mother volunteered there. And she said, Robert, you've just got to help us. The shelves are empty, but we need quality food to feed those hungry. And so Robert started shipping food to them with his partner, Cisco. And that went on for several years. And look where we are now.
Well, tell us where we are now. Give us some data about exactly what sort of value the organization is providing.
Absolutely. So in the last 5 years, we've seen 174% growth.
Wow.
In the last 5 years, we've seen 174% growth. So that's both in the amount of food that we distribute and the number of pantries that we distribute to. So if you're not familiar with Extra Table, we're not a canned food drive. We're a food bank. So we fundraise in order to purchase new, healthy, and shelf-stable food that we deliver to 63 partner food pantries every single month to their doorstep for absolutely free. There's no membership fee. There's no application processor fee. It's free to our food pantry partners. It's our job to fundraise for that food and make sure that they have the quality, healthy food that they need to feed their food pantries.
And you're providing service like this across the entire state, right? Communities across the state.
We are. We're in 63 food pantries across 51 counties. And so that food goes out every single month from our warehouse here in Hattiesburg, and it goes out to those food pantries. And every month our pantries receive about $1,400 to $1,500 worth of wholesale reduced price groceries. So it's a $2,000 to $3,000 grocery store value. And, you know, it's 3 to 5 different items and 2 to 300 of each item. So it's the quality, healthy food. It's the same food that you and I have at home on our pantry shelves. And, you know, at Extra Table, we say meals matter, but dollars make the difference, because it's your donated dollar that allows us to use our buying power to buy much more food. We're not going to the local grocery store. We're going direct to the manufacturer and purchasing a truckload of tuna, a truckload of peanut butter, a truckload of vegetables in order to get the most quality, healthy food to those hungry across our state.
Yeah. I've seen data, Martha, that indicates 1 in 6 in Mississippi are underfed or will go underfed. Is that right? What's the real data?
It's 1 in 6, and okay. Some reports are 1 in 5. So
wow.
we use the statistic 1 in 5. And so that statistic is really scary when you think about it. And our children are hungry. And, you know, if our children don't get proper nutrition by the time, you know, they're a teenager, then their brains are not going to fully develop. And we can't go back and provide brain growth at any time. And, you know, do kids really have a behavioral problem, or can they not hear the teacher over their stomach growling?
Wow.
And, you know, college hunger is a big thing. We have food pantries on college campuses because we've made it possible for that 74.6% of children that got free and reduced meals in the public school system in elementary, middle, and high school, but there's not a food program for college.
Right.
And then, you know, you and I know that people are a danger. Employees are a danger on factory floors if they're not alert and properly fed. And our grandparents are going to decline rapidly without that nutrition. So nutrition is a basic human right. We've got to make sure that our neighbors are fed in order to for them to be educated, in order for them to contribute to the economy as an adult. All those things, everything starts with food and quality food.
I mean, that's nearly 600,000 people in Mississippi. The 1 in 6 statistic.
In a state of 2.9 million.
Right.
You're exactly right.
That's hard to fathom.
670,000.
So,
it is. It's scary. And another statistic that always just scares me as well is 13.4% of working Mississippians are still going to our food pantries. They're still hungry. So it's the working poor is kind of a new term that's kind of come out of COVID. And the food deserts are just amplified due to our rural nature in Mississippi. So there's a lot of statistics that are stacked against people. And, you know, a food pantry is an emergency answer, but some people never get out of that emergency zone.
Yeah. Really incredible. Is it more pronounced, Martha, in the state of Mississippi? And is that just a result of us being the most impoverished state?
Yes, all those things tie together. So we are, we rotate between 1 and 2 being the hungriest state in the nation. And we have 4 of the 10 hungriest counties in the nation are in the state of Mississippi. So the statistics do not paint a pretty picture. We've got an incredible community and a hospitable state that steps up to take care of those. But, you know, that's what we do at Extra Table. We fundraise, we tell our story. We thank you for allowing us to tell it to all your listeners today. But that's how we can do our work and do it better and grow our program to get into more food pantries and in more corners of the state.
So if folks want to help, how do they do that?
ExtraTable.org. It's really easy. Top right corner, click donate, or, you know, surf around on our website, learn more about what we're doing and how we work in the most efficient and effective ways. Every dollar donated and raised publicly goes to buy food.
Yeah.
That is a commitment. Our salaries are raised separately. So we're kind of like the St. Jude of, food.
Wow.
Fighting
so,
hunger.
So do you receive, any taxpayer funded donations or assistance?
We just passed a tax credit in 2023. We can receive income tax credits should a business choose to do that. And if you're a business owner listening, please contact me, extratable.org, because our tax credit is up to 50% of your total income tax liability, and it's dollar for dollar. It's not 25% or 50%. If you give me a dollar, I'll give you a dollar credit. And it's a one-page application. So
yeah, we're talking
it's
about
almost
state income
intimidating
taxes.
And scary.
State income
tax. Yes, state income taxes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So I wasn't aware of that. So
Extra not
Table.
For the individual, for the business.
Okay. So that's been added to the list. There's some other organizations as well that qualify for tax credits. So we're approaching the end of the year. There's usually caps on how much is available per program. Is there still some availability there?
There's plenty available. Last I looked, there was $500,000 of our $1 million
wow.
available. It's
okay.
a newer program. We're working really hard to get the message out there. So if you're listening and think it could possibly help your business, even if you are a private LLC, give me a call because we know how to help you. And, you know, it's an important thing to think, like, I might not be able to give $20,000 personally or from my business as a sponsorship annually to Extra Table, but I sure could write that income tax check.
Yeah.
And why not give it to a group that's going to use it to improve our state than the state government at a time like this?
Absolutely. So available to businesses. Just want to make that point. Not
yes.
individuals, right?
Okay. Available to businesses, income tax check. Credit available
okay.
to businesses.
Okay. Wow, 500,000 left, and we're running out of time. We only got 3 weeks, so we could certainly
We're in overdrive
it.
Here,
yeah.
spreading the word.
Okay, well, I'm glad we covered that, because that's incredibly important. This is a no-brainer. It's a dollar-for-dollar tax credit.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
A one-sheet piece of paper. You don't even have to consult your accountant for details on this one. It's that easy.
Wow.
If you overestimate, there's a five-year rollover period. So it's okay. Also ad valorem taxes. So it's okay. It's the Cadillac of tax credits.
Man, that is awesome. I'm glad to know that the organization has been included. You said that's only been the case for a couple of years, right?
Yes, sir. We passed it in 2023, so okay. It was active in 2024.
Because that has been a program that's gained a lot of popularity down at our legislature the last 5 or 6 years. There was only one or two organizations that qualified, and now there's a pretty decent number, but Extra Table being one of those, that's really good news. The holidays,
we're honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
We worked hard to receive that status, and especially in our 15th year. You know, we are hitting our 15th year, and we've grown so much, and it's, you know, about food and going forward. And every plate that we serve in our state tells a story of those hungry and those that are affected by food. Whether you're a donor, a volunteer, you operate a pantry, you've volunteered one time, or you want to take your child and explain to them that not everybody lives in the same bubble that we do.
We got to go, but I'll make this final point, and I know you're aware of this, Martha, but our audience may not be. Teachers are well aware of students that come into their classroom that are hungry, and I know a lot of teachers take that upon themselves and others to help out those children. That it's crazy, but you can't learn when you're hungry like that. So thank you, Martha.
Can't. Again, their stomach louder than the teacher.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Martha. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. We're coming right back in the Element Wealth Studio.
In Mississippi. Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name, I've got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad, I've got a name, I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my dad.
The great Jim Croce with the croaking toad.
He was one of the best.
Yeah, no doubt. So, appreciate Martha Allen, the executive director of Extra Table. Rather startling statistics. 1 in 6, 1 in 5 in Mississippi. Man, we got to fix that. And by the way, our food drive this Friday with the Mississippi Food Network, the Mississippi State Medical Association, of course, Super Talk Mississippi Media. Middays will be at the Kroger on I-55. Sponsors include Ergon Atmos Energy. So we're looking forward to that. You can make monetary contributions in person or online. Again, at Super Talk FM, you'll find an article just published, written by Ben Milam, Supertalk Mississippi News. And the first $10,000 will be matched, according to the Mississippi Food Network. So just $10, they say, can provide 60 meals to neighbors in need. So let's join together and help out. Man, I'm just looking at this arrest of this suspect on the CEO Brian Thompson murder. They got him in Altoona, Pennsylvania, as you reported, Will. Now, at this point, it's just a suspect. Altoona is 100 miles east of Pittsburgh, kind of situated between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Wow. We'll see where all that goes.
And he had 4 IDs on him.
Okay.
He had a silencer. And what else did he have? I was reading the article here. New York Post had a gun, silencer, 4 fake IDs, and they're trying to figure out actually who he is. And he was nabbed thanks to a tip that was called into local police.
Wow.
They're the ones that apprehended him. And I guess they called in the NYPD, and they're on their way there to Pennsylvania to figure it all out.
So, wow.
You knew with all the images of his face and the way they were able to track him getting on the, you know, from that murder scene to getting on the e-bike to getting on going through Central Park, they found the backpack filled with Monopoly money. It's just
That's weird.
Something out of a movie almost.
Totally
and then getting
weird.
On a bus. Eventually they would find him.
The other news that just broke is that Daniel Penny has been acquitted of criminally negligent homicide. He's the one that put a chokehold on a man, I believe it was a homeless man, on a subway in 2023. And this Daniel Penny is a Marine vet. And he felt compelled to step in, fearing that this individual could do harm and was going to be hostile to the riders on the subway. I honestly think he reacted in a way that a brave person that was trying to protect others would do. I mean, I see him as a good Samaritan. I'm a little shocked at the verdict, but I'm pleased with it. I think it's the right verdict, and I think it maybe sets a little bit of a precedent. Because this kind of crazy stuff's going on. There are crazy people all over these subways and other transportation modes as well in this country. So,
yeah,
not guilty.
They had a bunch of witnesses. One of them was said she was just scared to death and that this guy was ranting and raving about how he was willing to die.
Yeah.
And she was just scared, and she later thanked him.
Right. The testimony was very powerful in defense of Daniel Penny. So I'm just honestly just given the venue, I'm a little surprised, but I think justice prevailed here. You see verdicts like this, Will, and it when you think that our justice system is so contorted and so perverted, and then you see something like this and you say, okay, this is right. This is the right thing.
What's so crazy, it's almost 40 years to the day of, I don't know if you remember this, but the Bernie Getz.
Yeah.
You remember the Bernie Getz situation? Same situation. Only it was a little bit of a gang deal.
Yeah.
And this guy just so happened to be packing a 38 on him, and he killed these guys who were threatening him and other people. He got charged and got acquitted.
Wow.
I think he later was found liable. Civilly.
Yeah.
So he had to pay money. But, yeah, it was basically acquitted because he was protecting himself. And now I remember it sparked this whole big debate about, you know, self-defense and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They called him the subway vigilante and all this.
But I remember
it was, that was late December 84, so almost a little bit a year removed from 40 years from when that happened.
Right. Wow. Let's see, on the C Spire text line, have you seen the disgusting wanted poster of all insurance CEOs pictured in a red X over them? Yeah, and again, I'm certainly, we were talking about this a couple segments ago, that this has it increased the interest in discussing health insurance overall in this country. You know, there are some people who say it's just, I've seen this on social media, you may have as well. It's just worthless. A notable aspect, I'm reading from a social media post, a notable aspect of private health insurance is the absence of any reason for it to exist. It does not contain costs, expand coverage, or expedite care. It makes those all worse. Its sole function is to profit as a rent-seeking middleman between patients and providers. So, but what's the alternative? And I talked about this in our weekly meeting I reminded our group there of famous quote by Winston Churchill. I don't know if folks remember that or not. But with respect to health insurance, I kind of thought that maybe this applies. And he said, you know, democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. So do you want single-payer government-provided insurance as an alternative? Or do you want more government oversight, more government regulation, more government control? Do you want bureaucrats sitting at the table with the health insurance workers to approve or deny claims? I mean, what's the solution here?
And who decides who those people are? Is it an election to decide who those people are?
I mean, this is a right, exactly. This is it's just a tough one. For sure, and again, not defending health insurance companies. I'm just asking a serious question. Okay, well then, what's the alternative? You know, in the UK, there is government-provided, you're aware of that, government-provided socialized health care, if you will. It's estimated that last year in the UK, 120,000 people died in the UK, just waiting for whatever medical care and treatment they needed, and it's backed up because of the degree to which it has been under the control of the government.
Yeah.
So is that a better option?
If you ever travel to a country that has socialized medicine and you ask the people, and there are obviously there's some benefits to it, but there's a lot of negatives too that don't really get talked about. I've been to Greece several times, and when I talk to the people over there, it's a headache.
Yeah.
And they pay money under the table to doctors to ahead of the line.
It breeds corruption. That's exactly right. No doubt about that.
And the doctors aren't paid as much. That's one of the real big reasons why we haven't gone to it is because guess what, doctors? Your pay is going to get cut in half.
Oh, dramatically. Yeah, dramatically. Like they all get paid. I've read about that. Like in Spain, you know, everybody gets paid, all doctors, no matter what your specialty, what you practice, you're going to make $75,000 a year.
Yep.
You work for the government. You are a paid. That's truly, I know our friend Thomas likes to talk about Medicaid expansion being socialized medicine. Now, socialized medicine is when every health care provider is an employee of the government.
Whether you're good,
doesn't matter. That's right. And you make the same amount of pay no matter what, and there's no motivation to deliver positive outcomes because it doesn't matter. You still got your job, you make $75,000. I can't comprehend it. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway. Pass me by.
Mississippi, middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
It is middays. Mo says, yep, it's worse than that, talking about government socialized medicine, elderly are euthanized when the government doesn't want to spend any more money on them. By the way, you know, our old friend Robert Reich that I like to quote a lot because he's very active on social media, there's an interesting video. I don't know if I've ever talked about this when you're on the show, Will, where Reich, I believe at the time, was a professor, I think at Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley. and he's addressing students. And he's talking about health care. I'm trying to remember this. This is 30 years ago when he produced this. But basically what he says is, if a politician wanted to be honest about health care and the continuous increase in its cost, and by the way, that is a large reason we're producing these multi-trillion dollar deficits, is health care. It's the amount of money spent
absolutely
at the federal level on health care between Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare subsidies, TRICARE. That is, consumes a big chunk, about a third now. In fact, we're rapidly headed to a point where all the revenue collected by the government from taxes, corporate income taxes, individual income taxes, and a few other taxes, will only cover our output in spending on health care. Think about that. The taxes only cover Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, Obamacare subsidies, and some of the other programs. Only that. Everything else we have to borrow money for. Defense. Think about that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, there is this, in this video, Robert Wright says, to be honest, this is a politician, he's like pretending to be one. I'm sorry, you've reached a certain age and, well, you're just going to have to die. I mean, that's what he says in the video. This is 30 years ago, to Moses' point. It is true that it's the government. Remember when the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, was being debated up there in Washington? The outcries from opponents was, we're going to have these death panels. I don't know if you remember that phrase or not, that
death
label, death panels. I want to say it was Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin.
She really focused on that, the death panels, as part of that. But I hear you, Mose. And then 342 RC Speedway here on the C Spire text line says, this is Jonathan, who describes himself as a conservative libertarian. Wouldn't extreme competition between insurance companies for customers help the situation? And I'm going to give you a short answer, and you can certainly choose to accept my answer or not, or reject it there, Jonathan. The short answer is no. And here's why. There are, you may be surprised to find this, nearly 1,000 health insurance companies in this country. 1,000. Do you know that? 1,000.
I didn't know that.
There are 1,000. Now, the top 10 account for 50% of the coverage, because it's all the names you're probably familiar with. United Health, which is the largest. But at largest, its total share of the market's 15%. 15. There's Elevance, Anthem, that used to be the old Blue Cross, Blue Shield group. At 9%, Kaiser Permanente, 9%, Centene, which is also branded, sells under the brand Ambetter. It's available in Mississippi in our exchanges. 8.6%, Humana, 7%, CVS, Molina, GuideWell, and that's Florida Blue Cross, 2.1%, Independence Blue Cross, 2.1%. I mean, it's fragmented. There are plenty. And there's always this call for, we need to allow insurance to be sold across state lines. You hear that all the time. That would lower the cost. There's nothing preventing any of these 1,000 companies from selling insurance in Mississippi today. The reason they don't is because nobody wants insurance that their doctor doesn't accept. That means you got to pay when services are rendered, file the claim, and then wait if they're not in their network and they don't accept. And guess what? Doctors don't want to deal with 1,000 different insurance companies. They really only deal with one, for obvious reasons. It's a lot easier to fight one, to collect money from one, because that's how they get paid, than it would be 1,000 or 10, for that matter. And so the insurers know, man, if I wanted to drop in Mississippi and start selling insurance, I got to go fight to get these doctors to join my network and providers. And they're going to say, we got plenty. We already got five or six. We got Humana and United and Blue Cross of Mississippi and Ambetter and Magnolia Health and Molina. We got enough. Plus, we got Medicare and Medicaid on top of that. So you could do that now. There's no prevent. And you could say, well, I want to buy insurance from an insurance company in Louisiana. That's great, except none of your doctors are going to take it. You're going to have to file your claims.
Yeah.
That's then. And insurance is regulated, for the most part, at the state level. That's why we have a State Department of Insurance. Every state does. Now, of course, there are federal regulations as well, many of which were passed and enacted as part of the Affordable Care Act. But it's, and the other thing I want to point out, the healthcare industry is $4.6 trillion. The entire GDP of the country is 25. It has been fairly steady at about one-sixth of the total GDP of the country for decades. I don't know why, but as the GDP goes up, healthcare goes up as well, and so do a lot of other industries. But as a percentage of the total as an industry, it's about one-sixth. The total revenue generated by health insurers is about $1.1 trillion. It's a little less than 25%. You following me there?
Mm-hmm.
Their total profit combined, total aggregate profit of health insurance companies. I'm not talking about the other lines of businesses that they may be in. I'm talking about just from the sale of health insurance. Is about $45 billion. In other words, the profit produced by the health insurance companies is about 1% of the total health care economy. Let's just say they operated not for profit. Okay, your premiums go down 1%. Let's say that we got rid of private health insurers. That's what Kamala Harris and all the Democrats want to do. They've been calling for that for decades, going back to Bill Clinton. Let's just nationalize it. Everybody's on Medicare. And if that were to happen and all reimbursement rates were at Medicare levels, you'd see a dramatic change in this country in the delivery of care and the innovation in care. We would look like Greece. We would look like the U.K.
Yeah.
It's a complicated deal.
It seems to me, too, the cost of health care is just – I'll give you an example. My wife and I were on a health share plan a couple of years ago because of her employment status. We had to be on one. And we were on it for about a year. And she had to have a procedure. And basically the way those things work is you have to get a cash price from the health care provider.
Right.
So she had this procedure, but before she had to do that, she got this cash price. They looked at her like she was insane.
Yeah.
And then when she finally got the information from them, two hospitals, and it was completely almost double for one of the other, and it was the same procedure. And it was a simple procedure, nothing super complicated. They had no clue what their actual cost was. The one who doubled had no clue what their actual cost was for this. Now, how can you run a business?
They do, because there's so many inputs to that. If you went in and said, hey, I need such and such medical procedures and services, how much is that going to cost? They generally can't tell you. I mean, that's been a big argument in this country that's gotten a lot of attention, as well as just the idea of price transparency.
Yeah.
So I just want folks to know I'm not defending insurers, and I have zero investment in any health insurance companies. I'm just sharing with you the math. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this in our meeting this morning. So $45 billion, the total aggregate profit on this $1.1 trillion of revenue, that's not squat. That's peanuts. That's less than peanuts. That's a terrible profit margin. Terrible. NVIDIA made more in the last two quarters than the entire healthcare industry made in a year. They made 2.5 quarters. They made about $45, $46 billion in 2.5 quarters on revenue of about $70 billion as opposed to $1.1 trillion. That's how crazy this thing is. It's a terrible industry. We're stepping aside for a break. Final segment is next. Baby, 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 want to move it down.
Window Tint Headquarters.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
One of their all-time best.
Absolutely.
Fleetwood Mac, the video's good, too. So on the C Spire text line, Will, tell Gerard that he is at the age that if mandatory euthanasia becomes law, he will be at the top of the list, regardless of what he thinks of himself. Are you trying to get me out of here? Gee whiz. So then somebody else on the C Spire text line, I need to clarify this. We want the same insurance our politicians have. They didn't want Obamacare. You may be surprised to find, folks, to find out, to learn, folks, that you know where members of Congress and their staff get their insurance? In accordance with law, the ACA Exchange, they actually are on Obamacare by law. The ACA Exchange in Washington, D.C.
Really?
Yes, and I can tell you the story. I remember tracking this. It was Chuck Grassley, the senator from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
What is he now, 85, 86 years old?
Yep.
By the way, if you ever listen to him talk, after you do that, go watch an episode of Green Acres and hear Sam Drucker talk. They sound just alike. They do. I'm serious. Sam Drucker. So when it looked like this thing was going to pass, the Affordable Care Act, right, he inserted at the 11th hour an amendment that made its way through that nobody saw, that required, mandated members of Congress and their staff obtain their coverage in the ACA Exchange. Now, they're not eligible for subsidies, but they get their coverage. And by the way, the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, the FEHB, which was established in like 1961, it pays around 72% of premiums for those who work for the federal government since 1961. I mean, this ain't anything new. It's been around forever. And Congress is, historically, they've participated in that. But Obamacare changed that, requiring them to buy their insurance. Now, this is private health insurance, and it's the gold and silver plans, just like are sold in the rest of the country that 20 million people have.
Hmm.
Including here in Mississippi. So it's a myth. They have nothing special. And by the way, the government pays the same amount, about 72%, which, by the way, is consistent with private insurance reimbursement across the private sector. On average, the private sector employers who provide coverage as a benefit to their employees, they cover about 72% of that. On average, it's equivalent to what the federal government pays for federal employees. So they have the exact same coverage. They don't have any special deal. Now the unions, that's another story. They get what are called, they've negotiated in their contracts what are called Cadillac plans. I don't know if you've ever heard that before. That have coverage that the rest of us don't. Us non-union stoolies don't have the coverage that these unions have negotiated. Like zero deductibles and zero co-pays and zero out-of-pocket so-called Cadillac plans that cost about $40,000 to $50,000 a year. And they've negotiated. Yeah, you want to know why stuff's expensive? See, that the left doesn't want to hear this. Go check it out. And in fact, I don't know if you know this, but Obamacare included a tax that you'd have to pay if you were enrolled in a Cadillac plan because you had something special, and then that got repealed. It's crazy. I'm telling you. This whole world is crazy. And R.C. Speedway, our Jonathan, our libertarian, conservative libertarian, he says, now we're getting close to the root cause, government overregulation. Maybe you could talk about that. Right. I agree. So, but when you're mad at United Health for denying claims, what fixes that besides more government regulation? You can say more competition. Well, there are 950 other companies that sell health insurance. If you live in the state of Mississippi, you got plenty of choices besides United Healthcare. And then, of course, they, just like Blue Cross and others, they're primarily interested, honestly, Will, in the group market, meaning they want to go to a business and say, hey, we'll provide health insurance as an optional benefit to your hundreds, if not thousands, of employees. They don't want to sell one at a time in the individual market. That's what the exchanges are more geared for. And the other disparity is that when you contribute to your health insurance as an employee, that's pre-tax, just as the amount that your employer pays, that's pre-tax. That's not taxable. It's not a non-taxable benefit. You follow me? Mm-hmm. In the individual market, that's not the case. That's been a disparity that I've been trying to get fixed. I mean, I've talked to our people in Washington for 20 years now. That's a true story. So you don't get the same benefit if you're a self-employed. You don't get the same benefit from a tax perspective. That's crap. That's crazy. That would help a lot if we could fix. That's an easy fix. Tomorrow, we're going to be at the Sheraton for the Empower Policy Summit. Tune in then, or better yet, come by and see us if you're in the area. We're out of here today. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors is next after Fox News and Super Talk News. How about Soto's $765 million deal?
We ought to all play baseball.
I know. Until then, stay safe and God bless everyone.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.